When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Santana into the windup. The payoff pitch on the way. Swung on and missed. Strike three. He's done it. Johan Santana has pitched a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Chris McMonagle.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. WFAN.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Chris McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 2 o'clock. I got you for 4 hours. Richard Neer will come your way then. But it's me and you. You know the number. 877-337-6666. And what a sports night it was on a Friday night. What a sports night in the city. A bunch of good games, obviously. The Knicks and Brunson. He has a career high 48 points. And without Julius Randle, the New York Knicks go into Cleveland and beat the Cavaliers 130-116 in a building they're going to probably, most likely, have to win some games in if they're going to get out of the first round. Brooklyn and their superstar Bridges, 42 points to beat Atlanta. The Rangers, unfortunately, fall in overtime to the Buffalo Sabres. We'll get into all that, but I do want to start with baseball and the Mets, as obviously they have a tough loss to Miami on a Friday night. And man, oh man, we can say whatever we want about this pitch clock. That game was 2 hours and 9 minutes. When's the last time? I don't care when it started. I know it started early at 6:30. When's the last time a Friday night baseball game was over before 9 p.m.? For those of you who have young kids who love the game, this is the perfect night. You're there, it's 9 p.m., you're done watching the baseball game. But this is a frustrating loss in the one aspect for the New York Mets. We talked about it heading in. With the Verlander injury, how important it was for the David Petersons, the Tyler McGills, who will start later today, how important these games are and for them to step up and perform in the absence of the great player, to perform in the absence of the Verlander, step in into injuries and kind of help, you know, solidify this team. We talked about the playoff structure and how good the Mets are and what they're capable of. And I know BT earlier on Friday was talking about, you know, the goal is to get through April with .500 and keep your head above water. I don't know if necessarily I'd put a number on it at .500, whatever. It's a tough division. I don't know if you want to sign up for .500. I think this team is too good for that. But at the same time, you understand Verlander's going to be gone for a while. The pitching staff with Quintana out as well. Senga getting his feet underneath him in a new country and everything that goes with that might take some time. So you could understand if you get off to a little bit of a stumble or not the hot start maybe some expected or would want. But the problem is when you lose games like this where Peterson was pretty good. He wasn't fantastic. He was good. He gave you five innings. Yeah, there were runners on base every inning for the most part. And yeah, he was in and out of trouble. And the Mets played terrific defense other than Marte dropping a ball that was actually ruled a triple. I mean, sometimes the umpiring, the scoring just makes you, how the hell that's a triple? It's an easy basket catch, but it turns into a triple. But obviously the defense for the Mets all night, and honestly for the Marlins too, with great diving catches, Soler to rob the Mets. But when Peterson gives you five solid innings, that's what stands out to me tonight. It's the second game of the season. He did pitch well. It bodes well for the next month or so if you're going to need him, Tyler McGill tonight. But when Peterson goes out there and goes against the Miami team that, yeah, you know, they have Chisholm who hits the home run. They've got Soler who hits the home run. They've got some hitters in this lineup. But really, you look at their pitching, as you see the Cy Young Award winner the night before, Lizardo, who looked excellent for them, was a big-time prospect with Oakland. You know, the top of the rotation with some of the hitters, the Marlins might actually be a little bit more pesky than you think. And to go along with every other team in this division, they could win some games with their pitching and you know the amount of hitting they could get from their lineup. I mean, Chisholm hits the home run. He was terrible in center field, which is going to be a learning process from an infielder going out to play center field. But he's athletic enough, you figure he'd pick it up. But he lets a ball drop that kind of could get a Met rally going. They never could. Alonso with the home run late, had an opportunity with the bases loaded, unable to do anything. But, you know, when you get the kind of start from Peterson, where he gets through five, you play the defense that you play. McNeil with an unbelievable play to save a run at home. I mean, they did everything right in this game except hit. They're limited to three hits, two singles from Marte. And It feels like they wasted an opportunity to win a game with Peterson and or McGill on the mound, because that's really what you're looking for. As you're looking to stay afloat, as you're looking to stabilize this season, as you're trying to get through this Verlander injury, it'll probably be 2 months or so, you're going to see plenty of Peterson, you're going to see plenty of McGill, you're going to see other spot starts from different guys, and when you get that kind of pitching performance, if you want to be this great team, if you want to be a team that can compete with this division, and we all know how good the Atlanta Braves are and how many straight division titles they won. Philadelphia was in the World Series, and they got the best shortstop on the planet to add to that team. If you want to be the kind of team that Steve Cohen paid for, the kind of team that Steve Cohen's talked about winning a championship, the kind of team that the Mets fan base has now elevated their expectations, where winning seasons, division titles aren't as important as they used to be, won't be celebrated the same way. It's about winning championships. And anything short of that is a failure. And if you want to get to those expectations, if you want to be that kind of team, the nights when Peterson gives you five innings and the bullpen, for the most part, besides the Curtis giving up a home run in the eighth, if they're going to pitch like that and give up two runs, your offense has got to find a way to scratch out more runs and get a victory for that game. It's a positive in one aspect because Peterson did not have his best stuff. Didn't really locate that well, battled through. There was runners on base the entire time, helped out by his defense, no doubt. Defense played very well in this game. But if you're going to get that kind of start and you're going to get that kind of performance, you got to figure out a way to get the victory. And so in one aspect, yes, listen, Peterson looked good. He's probably going to be better than this. He's someone that you feel confident about. You've known him forever. Early in camp looked good. Stories about Verlander impressed with his stuff. Tylor McGill, you know what he was able to do last year in April. Really got the season off to a great start with his early start and his opening day start and the way he performed through April and May. You know, starting a game where you end up throwing a no-hitter. You need those guys to stabilize your season, and how they do that is by winning the games where they only give up one run in five innings, when all they do is give you a solo home run. When your defense plays the way they did behind him, and you get yourself in a bullpen game, in a tight game against the Marlins. These are games you should win. Now, it's one of 162. It's the second game of the year. Nobody's going crazy. And if you think about it, the idea that Peterson pitched well probably bodes well more than the offense came up short tonight. But that's what this team needs to do. As you get through April, as you get through May, and you're dealing with rotation injuries, and you're dealing with what you're dealing with, and you're trying to be the team you're trying to be, these are the games you should win. Now, Luzardo's a tough pitcher, like I said. The Marlins are a feisty little team. They've got some different guys that do different things in the lineup, get on base. Some of them hit for power. Some of them have experience. So it's not a pushover team. But these are the games you're looking to win if you want to do what you want to do, and if you want to have this team stabilize itself through the beginning part of this season when they're dealing with Verlander gone, you're dealing with Quintana gone, and you're trying to do what the expectations have now been built around this team. And it's frustrating and it's disappointing, and you look at it, and it's easy to brush away. It's the second game of the season. It's the second game of the season. Peterson pitched well, that's fine. But these are games the Mets should win. Watching that game last night, the handful of opportunities they had. Now, look, a bullet is caught by Soler that ties the game from Marte. They had a couple opportunities. Again, wonderful defense. Overall, the game was played clean. It was played crisp. Baseball's back, and it was awesome. I love watching it. 2 hours and 9 minutes. The pitch clock is a success. Now, I heard Keith and a caller just talking about it, and I'm interested to see, as you watch this game, about the pitch clock and the rules, there is something to me about the idea of the brand of baseball being played right now with the pitch clock, which, by the way, I love. I love, you know, the pace to it. I love the idea that you're not going to be slowed down by the minutiae. There's not going to be a million step-offs. You got to get in there. You got to throw the baseball. You got to be ready to hit, namely, which I think is really what you're seeing. The difference to me as we watch these pitch clock games is that it's not so much the pitchers, because that happens from time to time. I'm not saying it doesn't, it didn't prior, and that hasn't changed. But really, I mean, hitters would go for walks. They would stroll around the batter's box. They would fix their batting gloves. It would take forever to get back in the box. The hitters are ready to hit. The pitchers are ready to pitch. You'll love the pace of the game. I think it's been a huge success. And what you're seeing also with the way the Mets play defense, the shifts, the play McNeil has to make, like, those are going to be fun to watch athletes be athletic and make great plays and have to show off their range and show off their arms. I hated where it got to the point where these analytical teams and scouts were so good that you would almost every ball hit on the ground was just straight at a defender. And now you have to use your range. Now you have to use that arm. Now you have to use the smarts. And really the great play about the McNeil thing, yes, it goes off the glove. Yes, he attacks it and goes after it without any hesitation and does an incredible job to get there. But he pops up and knows exactly what to do with it. And that's thinking even before he makes the play. And that's the kind of headsy player McNeil is. And that's what you love about him, the grittiness, the toughness, but then to go along with the idea that he has baseball instincts. He is a baseball player. And for him to go make that play, pop up immediately, and throw a strike home was an incredible play to save a run. But about the pitch clock, as you watch these games, I do think there is something, and I hate to say this because I love it, and I'm pumped about the pitch clock. But a 2 hour and 9 minute fast-paced game that doesn't allow for any of the drama building over in between pitches and in between batters. And I've said this forever, and I didn't steal it from him, but he used to say it, and I totally agree. Mike Francesa would say it all the time. The same things that would make a game boring in the middle of the season, a game Yankees or Mets against Kansas City or Milwaukee or whoever, in the middle of August, and there is 40 seconds between pitches, and it just seems like it's taking forever. There's 19 foul balls in it at bat, and you're like, would you just be done with it? Put it in play. All the stuff that makes it boring or makes it slow that this pitch clock is going to help with, those same things make it exciting in October. And every ounce of drama is built out of the anticipation, which baseball is a game of anticipation, and you get ramped up for every pitch. And I don't know if they want to, if it's eliminating the pitch clock in postseason baseball, the way they'll eliminate the extra inning runner. I don't know if it's allowing more time. But as we go through this and we see more games that are 2 hours, 2 hours and 9 minutes, that's great over the 162. I applaud it. I think it makes a huge difference. I loved watching it. I'm looking forward to baseball the rest of the way under these circumstances. I think the game moves unbelievably well. I think it impacts defense. I think that's part of it too. Not only will the shift impact defense, but the pitch clock will, because these guys, I mean, how many times you see they would, you know, pan around, especially like, I remember Todd Frazier in particular, he'd have the glove on his head, he'd be twirling it around, they're writing their names in the dirt with their cleats. Like, now you have to be ready at any moment for a play to happen. You have to be on your toes. I think it helps defense. I think it helps every aspect of the game. But I do think, even having watched it for 2 days now, and we watched it all spring as well, but now the games matter. We're watching it in real time. We're watching it in important baseball games. As we're watching these games, I do think there is an element that can be tweaked come postseason time. Now, I don't know that. We'll see how it goes. Maybe we're just getting used to it. Maybe players are kind of rushing even a bit. Because, I mean, I was at the Yankee game. I know that, I think they did call one penalty on the Giants in the Yankee opener. As the clock was going, I don't remember a single pitcher getting past like three or four. I mean, it was a fast pace. They're not waiting around. Now, you did see some stuff with Lazard and different pitchers in the game against the Mets where they were letting it get down. Obviously, Scherzer has talked about letting the clock get down and try and mess with hitters. There is going to be a tool here, a strategy here, and as we move forward, we may see more of that. We're learning here. We're learning how baseball's going. But to have a Met game end before 9 p.m. is something we haven't seen in a long time. And I welcome it. But I do, and I only bring it up because I heard Keith as I was literally walking in, and I was thinking about it during the game. Like, this is really moving fast. And some of the buildup you get during a postseason game where you literally, like, I'm obviously into it as much as you can be. And every pitch, there is a release. There's a pitch, a foul ball. There is literally a... And then you build it back up until the next pitch. And if we're going to, I don't want to say rush, because I don't think the game feels rushed. But if you're not going to allow for that kind of extra buildup, I think they probably are missing out on something. So as much as I love it, and I do, I think as we go along, maybe we could see, and if we'll probably get through a postseason without any changes. I don't know if they'll make changes to it prior to a postseason this year, but maybe moving forward, there is something to the idea of letting it breathe a little bit more in the postseason. But having said that, if the Mets want to get to the postseason, I think starts like today from David Peterson have to be good enough to get you wins most of the time. It's the first series. The offense is just getting going. A lot of these guys were in the World Baseball Classic. We'll see how they, you know, they're going to have to get better here. But the defense was played crisply, and they got the start out of Peterson you're looking for. So it's a pro and a con. The pro, Peterson gave you the start. Hopefully McGill gives you the start tonight. But Peterson pitched well enough. Five innings, one run out of Peterson you will take every time, and most of the time you have to win that game. 877-337-6666. We'll take your phone calls. We'll get more into the Knicks and Brunson, who without Randall, and it looks like they're obviously they're going to be without Randall the rest of the regular season. Hopefully, it depends on. It could be a good thing for someone who plays more minutes than anybody else in the NBA. And if you give him a two-week break, maybe he'll feel rested. And we saw what happened to him in the postseason 2 years ago where he absolutely looked just completely finished by the time that Hawks series rolled around. Now, I don't know if that was necessarily because of the minutes or because of the moment or whatever the case may be. But 2 weeks off for Randall, while the Knicks are now probably set into that five seed, looking to play Cleveland, it could be a good thing and give him some time. But if he's literally in a position where that ankle's so bad he's not going to be on his feet and he's not going to be doing anything for 2 weeks, I'm a little concerned. But the difference between this team and the team 2 years ago in the postseason is they have Brunson, who looks absolutely phenomenal. He's been dealing with injuries of his own, but when he's on the court, I mean, the second quarter, he dominated the basketball game. He took over at different times. He shoots three. He makes his own shot. He gets in the lane. He's able to put it up. He does everything. He took over this basketball game in a game where Mitchell scored 42 himself for Cleveland. Brunson was the best player on the floor, and Brunson brought home a victory for the Knicks. And he can do it in every which way. And you showed some fight from the Knicks as well, as RJ and Obi got into it a little bit, which is always good to see, as long as it ends the way it ended, where they're just, you know, tapping each other on the back, acknowledging, hey, it was just a momentary thing. That's good. It means they care. It means they're looking to win. I'm sure Obi has taken this 2 weeks heading into the postseason as some sort of, you know, opportunity for him to show what he can do and show, A, let's be honest, what he can show to everyone else watching around the league, because as long as Randall's here, I'm not sure Obi's place on this team. But even for the Knicks moving forward into the postseason, that he can play every once in a while more than 12 minutes. And I'm sure he was into it, and obviously RJ is into it, and the Knicks get a good victory in a building they're going to have to get some more in if they're going to want to move on in the postseason. But Brunson's incredible. That's the difference. You're going to have to see what kind of Randall you get moving into 2 weeks. But here we are, April 1st, 2:20 in the morning, and the Knicks are feeling pretty good about being a five seed. They have one of the best players in the league on their team. It's been as good a free agent signing as any New York sports team has had in forever. And it was a nice victory in Cleveland. The Nets holding on to their spot as well as Bridges goes for 42, and they blow out the Hawks. Overall, it was a pretty good night. You got the start from Peterson despite the loss. Both basketball teams win, and the Rangers do drop a game, but you're feeling they're already locked into the playoffs. And you know, in hockey, it's nice to have home ice, but if the Rangers play their game, they're good enough to beat anybody. So it was a good Friday night. We're getting you through a Saturday morning. I got you for 4 hours. Give me a call, 877-337-6666. You can also hit me up on Twitter at @CMACWFAN. We're talking baseball. We're talking hoops. We got a couple other things to throw around. I want to talk about Gary Sanchez, which was made Manny laugh on the other side when he found out he signed a minor league deal. How the mighty have fallen. So we got plenty to do, plenty to get to. The Rendon video, which I think is a major problem for him in baseball. Got plenty to get to over the next 4 hours. Give me a call, 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you on The Fan.